I'm Klondike Pete, I tend the bar for men both brave and bold. It warms my heart to serve them all the ale with Brewer's Gold.
Enjoy that golden flavor, true ale flavor. Oh, that Valentine. Ale with Brewer's Gold.
Brewmasters know this Brewer's Gold, the best hop from the vine. They brew it into Valentine for flavor genuine.
It's got that golden flavor.
Oh, look at you, Catherine Bell, so young. And look at me, so young. I haven't skated ever since that time. I wonder who it was who took this photo of us. I never found out his name. Down the path, through the woods, the fallen snow, my neighborhood, the blackest ice, the silver dream, as we go skating downstream. Take my gloves, I'll take a cow. Take my money, but I'm begging, please don't take my shoe. Take my house, take my clothes, take my wife, lighten up my load. Take my feet, you can take my toes, but please don't take my shoe.
From the downtown farm, New York City, the city that never sleeps, the city that never weeps, the city where nothing keeps.
Coming to you live on WCJD 90.2, New York, high atop the Empire State Building.
Call the Sledgehammer now at 1-800-366-6732.
This is the Sledgehammer, Steve King, coming to you live on a Christmas Eve. The snow is falling, the world is falling apart, and I can't get my medicine bottle open. What do you want to talk about? Phone lines are open. Anything goes tonight. Let's start off with David in Buffalo. David, you're up first with the sledgehammer.
Yeah, hi. This is David. Is this... Am I on now?
Oh, I don't know, David.
Okay. I think you're one of the most offensive, degenerate, and most... probably most dangerous hate show host in the country, if not the world. Yeah. I don't think there's anything that comes out of your mouth that's true, and I don't know if you've ever gone to the bottom of what's so deeply troubling you, but...
right now, David, it's you.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, I do.
These ideas that you have aren't based in reality at all. They're just based on your own hatred of humanity. I think if you had your way, if you had a button, I think you would press it and destroy all of, the universe. Is that fair? Do you think you would do that?
Well, I think if I had a button, David, that I could press and destroy you, I might. I'd have to think about the other thing. You know, as I was coming into the studio this evening, walking along the alleyways as I like to do, to keep away from the rats. And when I say rats, I don't mean rats. I mean you people, with your brown hair and white teeth, little box of candy canes under one arm, Christmas presents under the other, Mona Lisa smiles walking through the Christmas tide. Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas. So I'm walking along the alley. Snow is falling, bitter cold. I feel like death on a plate from whatever this mysterious ailment is that's got me by the throat. And up ahead in the alleyway shadows, I see a little old lady wearing an awful little old lady outfit. Beige coat, big black coal shoes, little bit of tissue going over the top of her head. And a smile to hold up the world. Now, long-time listeners of this program will know that I cannot abide a smiler. I don't agree with the basic premise. So, I cut over to the other side of the alley, and she comes with me. It's an ambush. So I walk slowly toward her, and she starts poking her mittany finger toward me. "Are you Steve King?" she asks. "Are you the radio talk show host?" And I said, "Yes, my dear, I am." And she says, "You're the most dangerous person on the planet. You're what's wrong with the world. They should lock you up and throw away the key. You should be ashamed of yourself. You should be in an asylum." Now, normally, I don't converse with my admiring fans, but it's Christmas. So I said, "My dear, don't you think they've locked me up? Don't you think they've thrown away the key? I am ashamed, and this is the asylum. This is hell. And right now, my dear, you are hell's brightest angel. 1-800-366-6732. Christmas Eve, what do you want to talk about? Phone lines are open, anything goes. Let's go to Mike in Manhattan. Mike, you're next with the sledgehammer.
Is that me?
Yeah.
Sorry, sometimes I call the other station for sports, and right before I go on the air, there's a whoosh, and I didn't hear a whoosh, so I wasn't sure if you were talking to me, but...
Well, why don't we just say I wasn't talking to you? It's a whooshless show, I'm afraid. Let's go to Fred in Minnesota. Fred, you're next with the sledgehammer.
Is this Steve King? I am so tired of you still being on the air. I would rather have nails driven into my feet.
Well, Fred, why don't you bring your nails and your feet down to the studio, and I'll do you a great big favor.
Sledgehammer.
Call the Sledgehammer now at 1-800-366-6732.
Because, Fred, I have a sledgehammer, and I can tap those nails in for you. You know, some people wonder if I hate being hated. Well, no. I wear it as a badge of honor. You hate me, and yet here I am. I hate you, and yet there you are. It's a perfect arrangement as far as I'm concerned. Now, what it says about me is I've got the number one show in this time slot. Thank you very much. But what does it say about you? What are you doing out there, listening to this person, this thing you most hate? Do you know what sort of a sticky wicket you've gotten yourself into? You're so confused, so ashamed, so troubled. As you know, I like to say that there are 50 different states of confusion. And you, my sad, ruined packages left unopened and rotting at the dump, you suffer from every last one.
Ladies and gentlemen of the American phenomenon, like puppets in the Sesame Street, with me phenomenon. The problem is that something for Batman or for Robin, because we're stumbling and we're reeling, and the cars are pretty common. There are 50 states of confusion, from a modern stupefaction to a troubled institution. There are 50 states of confusion, from a hazy disarray to a mistaken evolution. I'm Bad Jackson, browned out and grown like a fuse. The old Samaritans become the new carnies and roots. My hands in my pockets, in my pants a little loose, and I shrug to myself, I believe I can feel. There are 50 states of confusion, from a modern stupefaction to a troubled institution. There are 50 states of confusion, from a hazy disarray to a mistaken evolution. I do 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 do.
One 800-366-6732. Christmas Eve. What do you want to talk about? I'll be with you till the midnight hour. Phone lines are open. Anything goes. Let's go to Greg in New Jersey. Greg, you're next.
Mr. King.
Yeah.
You're a vile human being. Truly awful. And you're probably a coward who would never have the guts to say to people's faces what you say to them on the radio.
Oh, if only that were the case, Gregory. If only it was so. But you come down my neck of the woods and ask my barber or my local haberdasher what sort of a person I am. I assure you, the report they provide will be grim and quite contrary to your assessment. I do have such guts, and it makes for a very honest but a very trying life. Let's go to Jim. Jim, you're next with the sledgehammer.
Steve, good to hear you. First time, long time. This is Jim from New York, and I just wanted to talk about families. People are getting away from what Christmas and the holidays are all about. It's just, you know, it's about love and being with your families and all the crazy things that go on. Hold on. Guys, can you keep it down? Guys, you guys keep it down? Keep it down, will you? Damn it, kids! Don't make me come over here!
Well, you make a good point about family, Jim. Thanks for the call. Let's go to Edward in Baton Rouge. Edward, you're next with the sledgehammer.
Steve?
Yes, Edward.
Can you hear me?
I can, Edward.
Hello? Am I on the air?
You are, Edward.
Steve, are you there?
Oh, Edward.
Can you hear me? Sledgehammer!
How do I do it, I wonder? How do I manage? How do I turn the trash of your lousy phone calls into high art? And why do I tolerate being treated so poorly by such a mass of gloomy cretins? You take a fragile little flower like me and treat me like a weed with your terrible calls and vile insults. You take a fragile little flower, I'm speaking right here about me. You take a fragile little flower, treat me just like a weed. You see the genius of the power of a man to turn your trash into art, to make worthwhile what is absolutely not. You take a fragile little flower, I'm speaking right here about me. Take a fragile little flower, treat me just like a weed. You see the genius of the power of a man to turn your trash into art, to make worthwhile what is absolutely not. And I for one won't stand it, yes, I for one believe that I'm extravagantly right and that you're absolutely wrong. That I'm extravagantly right and that's absolutely wrong. So keep that in mind. I'm right. You're wrong. Get over it. Let's go to Rick in Boston. Rick, you're next with the sledgehammer.
Yeah, Steve, I want to know when we're going to hear about these test results. What's going on with you?
Well, as we've been promising for a few weeks now, the results of my various tests are in. We did blood tests, MRIs, CAT scans, echocardiograms, ultrasounds, biopsies. My eyes and heart were injected with fluorescent dye. And so we'll all shortly find out together what's ailing me when Dr. Steve calls in with his diagnosis. And no, I don't know what he's found, whether I need surgery, another bucketful of these pills I can't open. One thing you can be sure of, however, is that I'm not going anywhere. You'll be pleased to know that the hate will go on.
I said the hate.
Here it comes.
Goes on and on. I said the hate.
Don't deny it.
Goes on and on. I said the hate.
We all feel it.
Goes on and on. I said the hate.
Give in to the pleasure of its darkness.
Goes on and on.
Oh my goodness. Let's go to Steve in New York. Steve, you're next with the Sledgehammer.
Hello, Steve.
You're on the air, sir.
You will receive 3 phone calls.
Well, I'll actually receive quite a few more than that, my friend. Let's go to Bill in Delaware. Bill, you're next.
3 phone calls.
A little trouble here with the phones. Who is this?
I am you.
Well then, I have the good fortune of hanging up on myself. That's a first. Goodbye, me.
The sun is setting. Whisper. Pray and sing.
Having a little problem here with the phones.
The moon is
technical
rising.
Difficulties here.
Whisper,
moment.
Pray and sleep.
Where did you hear these words?
The stars are shining.
Whisper, pray.
Make room. Your time is nearly done.
Is that a threat? Are you threatening me, sir?
It comes to its own end. It's coming to its end.
Stop it.
It ends.
Stop it.
It ends.
Stop it.
It ends.
Stop it. Stop it! Turn it off! Invasion! Let's take a little break here. Back in a moment.
Now there's a happy accident, an accident that could lead to opportunity. But then he had to take off his hat, and uh-oh, poor guy. Dry, lifeless hair can take the fun out of your life, but you can put it back with Brill Cream. With Brill Cream, a little that'll do. Watch Brill Cream put life in dry.
Sun falls strangely to the sea. Whisper, pray, and speak to me. Remember me. Strangely to the sky. Whisper, pray, and sing to me a lullaby. Thank you. the stars shine silver through the world. Whisper, pray, make room for me, make room for me.
Sledgehammer now at 1-800-366-6732.
So, a little problem with the phones there with that last caller. Technical difficulties. But hopefully we're back up and running. And I'm free to hang up on whomsoever I please. Phones are open. Anything goes. Let's go to Gary in Brooklyn. Gary, you're next with the sledgehammer.
Merry Christmas, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we haven't heard your famous homeless rant in a while, and I thought today of all days it'd be perfect.
A little Christmas wish for the scum of the earth.
Yeah, definitely something like that.
Well, just let me set this up for those of you who've never heard it. We got a call a little while back from someone who claim to know the main problem facing this planet. The homeless problem. If we could just take care of that, everything else would fall into place. Now what she said was this. You get all the homeless people together under one roof. You send in teams of doctors, truckloads of food. You get them all fresh clothes and beds. You give them jobs. And if you can do that, everything else will fall into place. And I said, well, that's a sweet idea. What a kind-hearted notion. But I've got a better idea. And I said this. You gather the homeless together at Fort Bragg. All 1 million of them. Stuff as many as you can onto a massive fleet of C-130s, the giant planes. Now, we're gonna have to buy them parachutes, and I've looked into this. A bargain basement red tag sale chute will cost around $400. I've also spoken to some of my friends in the military, and they estimate that it would cost approximately $200 to fly a single homeless person into Iraqi or Afghan airspace. A little cheaper than normal, because the planes won't be landing. We put 1 million of our worst and dimmest in the wastelands of Afghanistan. It will have that country on its knees in 1 week. That's a guarantee. It'll do to them what it did to us. So let's export our swarm of howling parasites. A human virus. Our primary disease. Operation Vagabond Vacation will kill 2 birds with 1 stone. Oh, my Lord. Oh, my goodness. Who said such hateful things? Oh, yes, I did. That's right. That's even better than I remember. So that's my modest proposal. You like that, Gary in Brooklyn?
Well, I was just wondering how you could feel that way, considering you yourself were homeless for a time.
I'm sorry? What was that?
Well, just a yes and no answer first. Were you, Steve King, the so-called sledgehammer, were you ever homeless?
Oh, where did you hear that from?
Hello? Hello,
yes,
are you there?
Yes, I'm...
For once in your life, can you answer a direct question with a direct answer? Yes or no?
I was simply trying to establish where you heard that, Gary. For a short period of time, a long time ago, for a year or so, through no fault of my own, I was between residences. Yes. But that's one of my little secrets, Gary. I thought I'd take to the grave. I wonder how you found out.
I'm surprised you don't remember me.
Well, I'm not surprised. I'm really beginning to wonder what your little point is here, Gary.
I just find it interesting that you have this very strong opinion about the homeless, when you yourself were once homeless wandering the streets.
I was in the gutter, yes. I was in the ditch, yes. But I never took a handout. I never stood in line for government cheese. And that's the difference here, Gary. That entitles me to my opinion. You know, at the end of my homeless year, I was lying in the street. I was dying in the street. Middle of winter, Christmas time, people streaming past me as I lay there. I was a young man, 30 years old, my so-called prime. I was starving, and I'd fallen over, and I couldn't get up. Now, I'd never taken a handout, but I needed help. So I was begging people with my eyes, imploring them with my whispers, "Could you please help me up? I seem to have fallen over. I promise you, I don't need any money if you could just help me over to the wall there." But you didn't help me, did you? That's when I learned the true meaning of Christmas. That's when I saw the true face of humanity. I needed help. I'd fallen through, and you pretended I wasn't there. Thank you for the call, Gary. I was lying in the street, dying in the street, no thanks to you. I was born to repeat all misery I've fallen through. Never gonna come, they're never gonna come, they're never gonna come, they're never gonna come, nothing to do. They're never gonna come, they're never gonna come, they're never gonna come, nothing to do. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, we are unequal, equally aristocratic or bourgeoisie. Balance is the burden of society. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, we are unequal, equally aristocratic or bourgeoisie. Balance is the burden of society. Ladies and gentlemen, as you can see, we are unequal, equally aristocratic or bourgeoisie. Balance is the burden of society. I was dying in the street, dying in the street. No thanks to you. I was born to repeat all misery I've fallen through. Never gonna come, they're never gonna come, they're never gonna come, they're never gonna come, nothing to do. So let that be a warning to all you people out there, lying in your ditches, in your gutters, in your dingy little apartments, waiting for love, for money, for the help of some stranger. No one's coming. No one's coming. And no one should come. So you do what I did and look down at your boots. See those little strings hanging on? Maybe they're frozen solid. Maybe they're slick with oil. Maybe they break when you tug on them. But that's all you've got. So you grab hold of your own bootstraps, and you pull yourself into standing, 'cause no one's coming. No one's coming. And how do I know? How do I know? I know because the hate goes on.
I said the hate.
Here it comes.
Goes on and on. I said the hate.
Don't try to stop it.
Goes on and on. I said the hate.
It's a beautiful black flower.
Goes on and on. I said the hate.
In it, on your lapel.
Goes on and on.
My own bootstraps. My own bootstraps. It's all I've ever had. Phone lines are open. Anything goes. Let's talk to D in Philadelphia. D, you're next with the sledgehammer.
I had to carry you about 6 blocks back to my apartment, and you were frozen solid.
Who is this?
It's Gary from Brooklyn. Who do you think it is?
Well, this call's over, Gary. Goodbye.
I remember I drew you a lukewarm bath and I put a rag on your lip.
Oh, you didn't.
You didn't talk for about a week. You don't remember that?
No.
You didn't eat for 3 days. You don't remember any of this?
No, I don't.
You slept on my couch, for God's sakes.
No, I did not.
And you gave your job at my store, Gary's Market in Brooklyn. You don't remember that?
Gary's Market.
Yeah, and you used to hang out in the back and play piano in the stockroom. I think you used to be some kind of musician.
What do you want me to say? Are you calling in for a thank you?
I just think that you should acknowledge it, because you didn't pick yourself up by your own bootstraps. I helped you out of the gutter. And then there was Catherine, too. Yeah, you remember her. And you blame her. That's right, you blame her for your homelessness. You think she caused it. And that's another problem you need to address.
She created the circumstances. It's not that complicated. All right, so you brought it up. Now I've got to deal with it. Get back to a level playing field, so I can once again be entitled to my own opinion. And I suppose I should say thank you to Gary, if indeed he did as he said, and helped me off the street. I honestly don't remember. I'm not lying. I wasn't in very good shape back then. But I do remember Gary's Market. And I do remember the piano. And Gary's right. I do blame Catherine. But I think once you hear what happened, you'll be on my side. And Gary's also right. I used to be a musician. I used to play piano. Wrote my own songs. Had a small record deal. Probably what I should have done with my life. But I got sidetracked. Anyway, the year before this debacle in the street, it's 1961. I've got a small record deal, I've got a little gig at the local town hall. They want me to play Christmas music next to an enormous Christmas tree. Now, I make an arrangement with the town hall manager. I'll play my own songs, but I agree to write them a Christmas song, and I'm supposed to play it every hour. I do my best, but even back then, I wasn't very cheery. So the lyrics were never quite finished. There were lots of la-las and lee-lees. At any rate, I would play my songs and then go out onto the street, have a beer, smoke a cigarette, watch the shoppers. And that's how I saw Catherine Bell for the first time, walking down the street. Now it's 1961. Everyone is wearing a hat. Men, women, children, pigeons. We all have to wear hats for some reason. But not Catherine Bell. And her hair is flowing wildly around the universe. And she's wearing some kind of homemade dress stitched together from sacking cloth and curtains and burlap. And the first time I saw her, I thought, well, look at this bohemian. Look at this beatnik, this gypsy slumming along the street. For I thought she was just pretending to be poor. And I scorned her from the distance. The next day, same thing. Play my songs, go outside. And there she is again. But this time, I notice how beautiful she is. And it occurs to me that I'm the only one who can see this. Because she's not wearing a hat. Because of her dress. Because of her nonconformity. Next day, same thing. I go outside. It's a blizzard. And this time I wonder, now, where does this creature live? And I picture an enormous townhouse with walk-through fireplaces, enormous couches covered with fluffy kittens, bronze sculptures, a handsome husband, beautiful children. And before I know it, I've tucked in behind her, and I'm following her down the street. And when she cuts through the forest, I follow her there. And then soon, we're walking up some railroad tracks, about a foot of snow, and I'm keeping well back so she doesn't know I'm there. At the top of the hill, I see some black smokestacks, and when we get there, I see an old train shack off to the side. It looks twice burned down, all the windows are smashed, and she goes inside, and I wait. And I wonder, now, what can she be doing in there? After a minute or so, I sneak up and peer through the smashed window. And there she is, lying on the floor, under a heap of sacking cloth, curtains, and burlap. Surrounded by candles, reading a book. Now here's the sort of person I was even back then. I looked in and saw this and I thought, well, that's too bad for me. I didn't care a whit about her. I just felt badly for myself because I wouldn't have anything to do with a homeless person. At any rate, next day, I'm back at the town hall playing my songs. And at some point, I look up. And there she is, singing along to some sad song I'm playing. I had followed her home, and she had somehow followed me to work. She lived down near the railroad tracks, at the top of the hill by the black smokestacks, in a rough little house, all the windows were cracked. Didn't have any clothes, but she sewed up a sack. I used to play piano at the old town hall. There was never a crowd, in fact, no one at all. One day at the end of a sad little song, I saw the girl in the sackcloth singing along. She sang, Lord, 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 hallelujah. Everything I love, it's blown away. Everything I love is blown away. She was making it up as she sang in the air, all the dreams in her heart and the way that she cared. Her eyes were closed tight and her hands in her hair. For as long as I prayed, I knew she'd be there. But my hands grew heavy, and the moment I stopped, the girl in the sack disappeared in the dark. And as I ran from the room with my just broken heart, I knew the girl in the sackcloth could never be caught. I went down later on to the railroad tracks, made my way up the hill to the black smokestack. Knocked on the door of the rough little shack, but there was nobody home, and she never came back. Lord, 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 hallelujah. Everything I love is blown away. Lord, 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 hallelujah. Everything I love is blown away. Lord, 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 hallelujah. Everything I love is blown away. I thought she was gone forever. But I did see her again a few months later, standing out in front of the majestic theater. We were both there, waiting for our dates. She was on one side, I was on the other. I knew who she was, of course, but I didn't think she knew who I was. At any rate, the time of the film came and went, and apparently we'd both been stood up. I wasn't feeling very brave, so I turned to leave. Took a few steps and felt a hand on my arm. I turned. We went into the theater like that, arm in arm. We didn't say a word. We just sat down and began to watch the movie. It was a Burt Lancaster picture, The Submarine Codebreaker. Ridiculous film. Somehow, Burt Lancaster is all alone on a submarine that's crashed at the bottom of the ocean. Where's the rest of the crew? No explanation. How did it crash? No idea. So Bert Lancaster is sitting there, sweating, lights flickering on and off, water leaking into the submarine, which is slowly tipping over. And he's listening to a stream of Nazi transmission. He's a mathematical genius, and he's there to decrypt the Nazi Enigma code. And if he can do it, he'll win the Second World War. Now, he's left his pencil and paper in one of the flooded-out compartments, so he cuts a bit of shoe leather from his boot and uses that to write his mathematical equations on the submarine wall. 17 is to 4, as 19 is to 3. No, that's not it. And at the end of the film, the lights flicker off a final time. But Bert Lancaster has done it. Aha, he says. 77 is to 27, as 48 is to 44. 77 is to 27, as 48 is to 44. And he rushes through the darkness to his Morse code machine to send this decryption off to Washington. 77 is to 27, as 48 is to... Whoosh. The submarine floods with water. Bert Lancaster dies. And we lose the Second World War. At the end of the film, Catherine Bell and I left the way we came in, arm in arm. I still don't know her name. We still haven't spoken a single word. But we go out in front of the theater, and I'm feeling very charged by this romantic encounter. And I want to tell her my name, and I want to tell her what I do. I'm a musician. I play the piano. I write my own songs. I have a small record deal. But I'm also cold-hearted. I can be cruel, judgmental. I have strong opinions. I can be arrogant, self-absorbed, mean. I wanted her to know the whole thing, so she'd know what sort of difficult person she might be getting herself mixed up with. But before I could say a single word, she put her hand on my chest and stops me. And she looks into my eyes. And then it was as though she was peering around the corners of my philosophy, past all my thoughts and opinions, to the very simple basin of my soul. And after a minute, her hand moved to my cheek. And she drew in closer and whispered, 77 is to 27. 48 is to 44. And I thought, my God, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with this woman. For how did she know how like the Nazi Enigma code I was? So cruel and tortured and complicated. How did she know that I needed my very own Bert Lancaster, stranded on a submarine at the bottom of the ocean? How did you know that, Catherine? Anyway, we went to her railroad shack and collected her things, and she moved into my apartment that night. And for 1 month, I was the happiest man on the planet. I was at the top of the happy hill. Then, one night, I came home late from the studio. We're just about done with the album, working on the last song, the damned Christmas La La song. and I still can't figure out the lyrics, so we go uptown to some other studio to work, and I get home late, and I look in the bedroom and call out her name, and then go into the living room. I turn on the light, and instantly I see that her things are gone. And I am out the door, running down the street, running through the woods, up the railroad tracks, heading for the only place I think she could be. And all along the way I'm thinking to myself, now what have I done? Was I cruel? Am I too self-absorbed? Whatever it was, I promised myself that I would change. Whatever she needed me to do, I would do. I got to the railroad shack, but she wasn't there. I went inside and lay down in the sackcloth and curtains to wait. For the next 2 or 3 days, I go back and forth between the railroad shack and my apartment. In both places, I leave her a note. Dear Catherine, I don't know what I did, but please forgive me. I promise you, I can change. In both notes, I sign the same way. 77 is to 27, as 48 is to 44. To remind her that she'd known from the very first moment what a difficult person I was. After 2 or 3 days, I remembered there was an old derelict motel on the hill. And then I remembered there were some bridges where the homeless people sometimes slept. And so I went to the motel and stayed there, and then to the bridges. And then I learned about other places where the homeless slept. Fields. Abandoned buildings. And so I went there. And then I noticed that I was having a great difficulty. The most awful feeling had overtaken me. And I realized that I somehow wasn't able to stop looking for her. Because she seemed so close, right around the corner, and our problem was so small it would take a moment to patch it up, then we'd go back to the way we were. And then one day, middle of winter, I fall down into the street, and I can't get up. And here comes old Gary to save the day. And so, yes, Gary, I blame her. Maybe I shouldn't, maybe that's not fair, maybe you're right. At any rate, that entire year, wherever I went, I wrote her letters and notes, just telling her of my day. Dear Cat, I caught a fish today. If you were here, we could share it. Dear Cat, I'll be spending the winter at the abandoned motel. Please come there if you get this note. Everywhere I went, I left her a note. And every note I left, I signed the same way. 77 is to 27, as 48 is to 44.
Seven to seven is 27, is 48, is 44.
44, 44.
was a cold night, a wicked evening, and I was trying to get a lift. The decorations of the building lights like a swollen landing strip. And then conceiving, I found some leaves that I wanted pressed and dried. The hands wouldn't let me work that night. I decided not to try. I went to Bright Street. I went in bare feet. I went to Barron's shoes and ties. There were streamers up. They won't let you browse. Hence, I lied.
77 is 27 is 48 is 44. 77 is 27 is 48 is 44.
44, 44, 44, 44. The wooden ceilings, the broken windows, the curtains drawn and torn. These old motels like sunken ships still crashing on the shore. There's a bird in the deep footprint and the snow outside the door. I'd feed her if the shoe'd been mine. Barons, I was declined. So I'm holed up for the winter in this broken down motel. I wrote to Cat to catch her up. P.S. I wrote, I'm well. There's a song of the fair traveler who rambles free and wide. I'm just like that, I wrote to Cat. Hence I lied.
77 is 27 is 48 is 44. 77 is 27 is 48 is 44 44 44 44 44.
I haven't talked about her in a long time. That's not true. I've never spoken of her. And why should I? Why should I tell you about us? But I wonder what happened to you, Catherine. If you're listening, feel free to call in. Let us all know what happened to you, whether you're alive or dead. You could call in and let us all know what I did that was so terrible. What sort of a bastard I was. Even back then. Let's take a break.
Happy little wash day song. For a wash that's whiter and brighter than you. Rinso washes, rinso new. Rinso
white. Whiter than new.
Rinso white.
Brighter than new.
Rinso white. Rinso white.
Rinso new.
Rinso new. It's an amazing fact. Rinso with Solium gets white clothes whiter, washable colors brighter than new. Rinso new. Even on rainy days, Rinso puts sunshine in your wash. No other soap can make your wash so white, so bright, because no other soap contains the scientific sunlight ingredient, Solium. And yet Rinso is so safe for clothes, so kind to your hands. Get Rinso today. See your wash become whiter, brighter than new.
Rinso white, Rinso white.
Rinso new.
Happy little wash day song.
Once upon a time there was an engineer.
Choo-choo Charlie was his name, we hear.
He had an engine and he sure had fun. He used good and plenty candy to make his train run.
Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Charlie says, really rings the bell. Charlie says, love my good and plenty. Don't know any other penny that I love so well.
Take a minute, see what's in it. When you're buying a vitamin product, read the label. Make sure you get all the vitamins recommended by government experts. You do in VIMS, and three essential minerals also. Get VIMS at your druggist. VI for vitamins, double MS for minerals. VIMS. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
New York City.
clap hands, here comes Steve King. Clap hands, here comes Steve King. Clap hands, here comes Mr. King. It's Mr. King.
Oh, yes, my friends.
So there's a little bit of my past. Why don't we check in with my future? Find out what it is that's ailing me. So let's page Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve, if you're out there, please call into the show. If you get a chance, you can let me know how to open these bottles. I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valves, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with a wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for all my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in a tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
Nurse?
Oh, in the mortuary, dead as a doornail. I'm posthumous, incredulous, and cold. I've got a bad case of the dead disease, paralyzing all my thoughts and bones. Will someone take the brain out and stick it in my head? I can't do it for myself, cause I'm already dead. I'm thinking Frankenstein to the maximum. Shoot some lightning in the marrow of my bones. I'll mark an expedite on the afterlife and push me quickly into heaven with a heave. But if I don't get in for my cause of death, I'm blaming Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
Yo, hee, yo!
I bring the crash car!
Yo, ho, ho, hee, ho!
And do the kung fu!
Yo, hee, yo!
Now he's dead. Uh-oh. Nurse?
Well, I see we have Dr. Steve on the phone. Let's find out what's ailing me. Dr. Steve, are you there?
I am.
Well, let's throw the dead dog on the table, put it out there, and let us all know what it is that's ailing me.
Well, Mr. King, this is something we really should be doing in the office.
Well,
we've
discussed this, and I'm perfectly comfortable having you announce whatever my diagnosis is over the air. It's all right.
I just, I'm not convinced that doing this on the air is a good idea.
Oh, maybe not for you, but for me it's a good idea.
Okay.
Let's proceed. What is my diagnosis?
What the biopsy shows is that you have pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
And the pancreatic cancer on the scans that we performed shows that it has already spread. Now, one of the problems with pancreatic cancer is that you very rarely will have symptoms before it is causing a problem. And your cancer is quite widespread. It's spread already to the liver and to the intestine and to the abdominal cavity.
So what would be a first next step in our attempt to treat this?
This, unfortunately, is one of those situations where we're extremely limited in our ability to treat the problem. Mm-hmm. Your congestive heart failure, which you had years ago and still have to this day, unfortunately precludes you from being able to take chemotherapy. We may be able to offer you some radiation treatments that might help with the pain.
Well, what about this? I don't mind about the chemotherapy. Despite what you said about the congestive heart failure, I would go ahead and take that risk. I'd sign whatever was required.
Well, the problem is that the chemotherapy that we'd be using is cardiotoxic. In other words, it can cause damage to the heart, and so you would, because of your congestive heart failure, would not be a candidate for chemotherapy.
It can, but it might not.
It's what we call an absolute contraindication, which means that it's much more likely to make you worse than it is to make you better. And my recommendation, to be honest with you, Mr. King, at this point, would be let me back up just a little bit. If we get to a point in someone's life where we cannot add quality days to their life, if we shift our focus from quantity of life to quality of life, it does open up a whole new universe of things that we can do. I can make you comfortable under just about any circumstances. I would not recommend that you continue to work.
Oh.
I think this disease is going to cause severe symptoms very soon. And we need to focus on making you comfortable. And that we can do without any question.
So what are we looking at here? Number of years? What are we looking at?
I think we're looking at weeks rather than months, and possibly days rather than weeks. But I think you would qualify for hospice care.
And just hypothetically, if I took 20 of the pain pills that you gave me, what would happen?
I can't...
Just hypothetically.
Well, hypothetically... not hypothetically, if you took 20 of the pain pills that I gave you, you would die. If you feel that you can't stop yourself from hurting yourself, then I need to admit you to the hospital immediately.
No.
I would ask you not to do that.
Of course.
And to take your medication only as prescribed.
Exactly.
My job is not to hasten your demise, but I can make you comfortable as long as you are on this earth, and that's what I can offer you at this point.
Okay. That's very kind. And unfortunately, I've never been fascinated by comfort, and I can't imagine lying in my bed in a comfortable daze until the end of my day. You mentioned quality of life. This is the only quality of life I have, doing this show. And if you're saying that's come to an end, well, that's the end of me. And I'll head off for the lost and found. It's just what I used to call it. I haven't thought about that for a long time. When I was very young, my older sister, Maddie, died. We lived out in the countryside. My mother was a washerwoman. My father was gone. One day my mother came home and said, "Well, we've lost her. We've lost Maddie." And I didn't understand. I said, "Well, I'll go out and find her." And my mother said, "No. We've really lost her." And I said, "Oh, well, we could go look at the church, in the lost and found church. That's where everything ends up." And my mother said, No. "We've lost her back to the earth. She's in the trees now, up with the clouds, above the woods. She's in the woods. She's singing with the birds. She's out lying in the field where you two used to lie." And I slipped my jacket on and I said, "Well, if she's out in the fields, then I'll find her." And I went running over the field, across the river, into the mountains, looking for my sister in the lost and found.
Thank you.
I sing with the birds so the sky stays awake. Asleep in the trees with the fish in the lake. I guess I'll go lay down in the clouds. My sister's gone to lay out in the fields. We always lay out on the ground, looking for the lost and found that we lost and found. I tied down the earth, but the dog never tires. I shut down stores, but these folks won't retire. So we all go lay out on the ground, looking for the lost and found that we lost. I guess that does it for me. End of the story. Time to head off for the lost and found. This is Steve King, the Sledgehammer. You know, I never liked that. This is Steve King, signing off. Been a good ride, all things considered. A good riddance, you lousy, miserable old earth.
WNBC, New York City.
Hello? Is this Steve?
Who is this?
I wanted to tell you something. A story.
This show's over. Show's over.
It was 1961. And we lived in a small apartment on Leiter Street, not far from the water.
Catherine.
In the evenings, after you'd come home from the studio, we'd have a drink out on our tiny porch. And then we'd go out, walking through the city. We'd walk all night sometimes, but we'd always end up at the pier. And we'd sit with our feet just above the waves. We were both very happy. But then I got word one afternoon that my mother was very sick and dying in a hospital in Vancouver. A train ticket had been wired, and I had to leave right away, so I ran down to tell you at the studio. But there was no one there. So I ran back to the apartment, and I wrote a note, and I left it on the bed. And I rushed off to the train station. It was only supposed to be a few days, but my mother rallied, and it went on for weeks. But I called every day, and I was sending telegrams. I called the studio, and they said that you were gone.
Yeah.
No one could find you. After my mother passed, I rushed home as soon as I could. But you weren't there.
Yeah.
You weren't there, Stephen.
I know.
I was so angry. So upset. It never for a moment crossed my mind that you hadn't seen my note. The only thing I thought was that you hadn't really cared about me.
Oh, no.
And until tonight, that's what I thought. So I returned to Vancouver, and I moved into my mother's house. I married. I had three daughters. I have grandchildren now. We moved back to New York about 15 years ago.
So you knew I was here. You listened to the show.
I sometimes listened. And after my husband died, I started to listen again. But you never mentioned me. You never said anything about us.
Why should I? Why should I? Who would care?
I'm only a few blocks away. Why don't I come down there?
No, no.
We can have a drink.
No.
We could take a walk through town. Down Main Street with all the beautiful lights.
Yeah.
We could sit on the pier.
You could push me in. I could drown.
Oh, Stevie. I could heat something up. I have a piano. You could play me that Christmas song.
I never finished the lyrics.
Oh. It worked like that.
I don't remember it. I've blocked it away.
I was feeling pretty good. La 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 la.
I was feeling pretty good. La la la. Is that how it goes?
I don't know. Maybe. I'll meet you downstairs in 5 minutes. We can have a walk through town. We'll have a late Christmas dinner. And you'll play it for me.
Singing like la la la, taking all the halls of the la 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 la, making my way to the la 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 la. I like to drink a little beer at the end of the day, go walking in the town, feel like a million miles away. Now the snow is like a sea, like the sand above the beach. The lights walking in the trees, the people shouting in the street, and the people in the light, and all the children in the light, singing holy, holy. Somewhere there's a blue bird of happiness. Well, let me go check and see if anyone's around here. This show never ends. The show is ended. This is the next show, starring not Steve King. It's a strange thing. I don't know if it comes across when I do it. I don't know if I should talk about it. Should I talk about it? Oh, God, you like it. I would imagine it would be hard to listen to an hour and a half of something, but I don't know. All right, then I will talk about it. It's very difficult to do performances. Even the first one, Adam's Motion in the Void, was very difficult. It is hard to talk about it. It's hard because it takes a lot of... When I did either of these plays, it took most of my time, all of my time, Even when I wasn't doing it, it felt very heavy on my interior, and I would be preoccupied. It's like not being around anymore. More so than other times when you're not around very much. So for the first play, Motion in the Void, I prepared for that for 8 months. 8 months of every day. And you can only do something like that for 4 hours or so. Maybe other people can go longer, but memorizing and reciting and going through it, it's mentally you can't do it. It's like doing some enormous brain teaser for 4 hours. It's just very tiring. And I wasn't falling down exhausted as though I'd run 7 marathons and answered 1,000 questions. Test or something like that. It's a different kind of thing where after I was done, I would just sit there and be vacant. And anxious. Vacant and anxious. Christina probably knows the word from that strange dictionary that she has access to. To be vacant and anxious. Vanxious. There it was. And then the thing is, what I'm saying is that I would like to be able to perform more regularly, but not regularly, if you know what I mean. Once a year would be good. Once a year for each thing for a couple of days would be fine. But it takes so long to get ready. It takes months and months. It shouldn't, but it does. It for me, I'm sure that others can get ready in a few days or weeks or something like that. Much more rapid. But I have certain needs in terms of what I'm doing. I need to feel very comfortable, very much like I've got it locked in. Because I don't want to worry about the memorizing part. And this second play here is easier. Whisper, Pray, Make Room is easier to do because there are so many bits, other people calling in, songs, things like that. So it was easier. I got some time off while other people spoke. Got time off. When there's that short section, Operation Vagabond Vacation, a little breaks. But for Adam's Motion in the Void, there was no break. It was just through, which was very trying. And I was always worried about losing my voice, and I was always taking strange cough drops and drinking odd teas and things like that. And the other curious thing is, no matter how many times I perform either of them, I'm very moved during them. I can't help it. Now, it almost feels, it's embarrassing. It seems like, why, if you create something that makes you weep, makes yourself weep, that seems vulgar, almost. It's like a painter who puts up a painting and stands and looks at it and begins to weep. Oh, look at what I've done. It's embarrassing. But regardless, it's true. Whenever even I practice doing them, there are places where I weep and it never ceases. I think, I keep expecting, well, I'll be used to this by now. It won't do anything to me anymore. But it does. I don't know why. I mean, I suppose I'm glad that it does, otherwise I wouldn't be able to convey it. So at least I'm imagining that I'm conveying something, a sensibility around it. It probably is. So I had a whole show, a different regular Radio Ghost plan for this evening. And then I've been thinking about doing this. I thought about doing it last year. And I just stumbled over some of the files and I thought, I'll look at it and see. So it was really just yesterday that the idea came. And then today I practiced a little, and then just And I don't know if you could tell, I missed one thing with this, one of the songs. I was miss singing it. It has had a longer piano run in, and I sang it too early. It didn't really break it up too much. But there were many places where I was really... And this is the thing about doing a place. Even when I did the Atom's Motion and then Whisper Frey, there are times, many times throughout a performance, we have absolutely no idea what you're doing, what you're supposed to be saying. These in the microseconds, they last so... They're very short, but you don't know that. So you feel it. It's like the moment that you think you're about to have a car accident. You see someone swerving into your lane and you don't know yet whether you're going to crash, and then you don't. But there are all these micro moments of absolute terror that don't show. They don't show on your face. And you move and then you remember the line and you keep going. You haven't even paused. It's not a moment for anyone but yourself. And you have hundreds of these. Every performance. That's why it's such a painful thing. Or can be. I mean, there are other parts that aren't painful. It's a very complicated experience. It's pleasant, it's pleasure, it's easy, it's hard, it's... There are parts that are simple. And then there are other parts where you're very self-conscious. So I had a whole other show ready, and I guess I'll do it the next... time. I don't know if next week I should do one because it's Christmassy time, but we'll see. It may be. Oh, but I am tired. Does anyone else want to? Wish I could. I feel like the Skype doesn't work anymore. Every time I've used it, everything breaks down. It's because there are too many things. There's the recorder. There's something. There's the thing that plays sound. And then there's being online. And they all seem to access the audio controls and suck upon them in some way and want something from them. And then the Skype does the same thing. And I have to actually open these programs in a certain way. Sean wrote it down on a piece of tape for me. Which one to go first? So I have to open up the recording program first, then the sound rack second, and then the thing that allows me to broadcast third. And if I don't do it in that way, well, nothing goes through. I don't know what it is about it. That's a sweet idea, Rob. You old clutch. Well, let us say then, you won't go out like it's a regular radio goes. So just slowly go. Oh, I do have it, actually. Let me see here. We both stood up. Yes, let me thank the Clutch and Wiggle Radio Network for allowing me to do this performance on their airwaves. It's risky business allowing theatrical performances. Very risky business. A lot of money can be lost, a lot of audience members lost. People aren't into that. Nobody wants to listen to some old man's Dickensian story. No one. Or hardly no one. There's not many. There's a few. That's how it works. I trade in Roman coins, and you enjoy Roman coins. And that is a good place to meet at the Roman Coin Club. So until next week, let us say, let me see if I can find where I'm at here. Used up my sound rack. There it is. Thank you so much, my friends, for joining me. Another year comes to a close. Well, I'll speak to you before the year comes to a close, so let's not do any of that business. I wish you a Merry Christmas. I wish you all the warmth and love that I can and may and might. It's always merry and bright to you. Always merry and bright. It's tired and I'm late. The old frozen fire turned out late. Tomorrow we'll slip through town, side every turn up, thing down. But now it's time to sweep. It's tired and I'm late. Untie your candles, I just lit the skates. We're sitting in sleepless light, count dreams till we're sleeping right. But now it's time to sweep.
Hit a ball now.
It's time to sweep.